Blog Talk Radio.
Georgia super liberal, never got to 50%, now there's a runoff. Meanwhile, self-pitying failed murderous thug sports star Aaron Hernandez kills self in prison after winning second murder trial. Now, will the national DNC, the national leadership of the Democrat Party, do the same? So was it all worth it for Aaron Hernandez, who couldn't leave gang culture behind after becoming a multimillionaire sports star in New England? I guess not, because the super macho gang member decided to check out early. So now that the Georgia Trump slayer John Ossoff has failed to sniper a seat in the U.S. House from a GOP-friendly area, will national DNC members follow Hernandez's lead and killed their failed party? They absolutely stink. One commentator released an article stating about Hillary that she ran the worst campaign in history. Another New York Times columnist even stated that the Dems have no bench and leaders and a complete leadership vacuum. So where did it all go wrong for Dems? How about 8 years of no growth economy? Or the seeding in of chaos, war, and ultra extremism in the Middle East? Or how about the decades of doctrinaire and bombastic anthropogenic global warming theories shoved down our throats at every turn? And one warning of disaster after another, the hottest year this, the driest summer that, or the complete implosion and meltdown of gender in our society as the extreme elites glory in the leadership of Bruce Caitlin Genital, who recently admitted going the full Monty and getting his downstairs replumbed and claiming it was the greatest experience in history. So where does this culture go from here? Destroy marriage? Check. Atomize gender? Check. Ridicule religion in the Bible? Check. Glorify socialism? Check. Make the default attitude one of enlightenment? Check. Smash the illusion of America's noble mission? Check. Now destroy democracy and republicanism while obliterating Trump. Well, anyway, 6:09 on the button. Kelly O'Connell, good morning to you. I couldn't help but notice that there's some weird things that are going on in the culture, and we're fighting back against it. You know, there's a lot of never Trump people that are still refusing to give the Donald a pat on the back. And so, what is the purpose? What's the meaning of Trump? I think Trump was one last attempt to save the culture, to save America, to save who we used to be. And I don't think it was anything deeper than that. It wasn't white nationalism. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't America's the greatest country in history and doesn't make any mistakes. It's this idea that we owe it to the world and to history to destroy ourselves that people were reacting to. There is so much, if not all, of leftism that's totally not only unproved, but disproved. And yet we have to be completely marinated in this crap all the time. I think that's what people were reacting to. Now, here's a little bit of this John Ossoff, who comes across as someone who's spent his entire life in Hollywood getting ready for this moment, totally inauthentic, super sincere, ultra-liberal guy who doesn't use labels, but undoubtedly at home calls himself a Marxist. Here's a little bit on him failing to get to 50%. If he gets to 50% in this open race, then he gets the seat. If not, then he has to reboot for runoff. And the Hollywood elites and others sent him, I think, something like $9 or $10 million, an unheard of amount.
Georgia's 6th congressional district, covering parts of Cobb, DeKalb, and Fulton County.
With 100% of precincts reporting now, Democrat John Ossoff is in the lead with 48%. Republican Karen Handel in second with 20%. 18 people ran for that seat.
Talent is Audrey Washington's live in DeKalb County. And Audrey, both candidates said overnight they are ready for the new race ahead.
And the two candidates both see the results as a win. But ultimately, the result of that runoff election is now in the hands of voters here in Dunwoody and in the rest of the district. As the night ticked on, the number of votes for Democrat John Ossoff teetered at just under 50%. He needed a little over that number of votes to fill the 6th district congressional seat. Now it's apparent the race will go to a runoff.
We will be ready to fight on and win in June if it is necessary.
Republican candidate Karen Handel echoed the same sentiments with around 20% of the vote. She came in at second place.
9 weeks from today, we have an opportunity, a real responsibility to elect a member of Congress who shares our values.
The fight for the 6th district congressional seat was a crowded one with 18 candidates. Ossoff looked to flip the traditional red district to blue, but Republican candidates say the district will remain conservative.
The views and values of a proven, independent, and conservative leader who has delivered for the people of this district.
At the Ossoff celebration, the candidate himself said, even in a runoff, he expects to win.
We may not know the outcome for some time. But let me tell you this. There is no doubt that this is already a victory for the ages.
A victory for the ages?
And of course,
what the hell was wrong with this guy?
Campaigning in the coming weeks before that runoff election that's set for June 20th.
All right, so I mean, these people are so deluded. They want to kill Trump under any and all circumstances. They want to strangle his presidency in the crib. Why is it so important? I mean, if it was so important to beat Trump, why didn't they have a good candidate? I'm just asking. I mean, you can lash out at me, the Frankies who are laying in bed flipping around in their pajamas while sucking on their whiskey in a baby bottle. But, you know, this guy, he sounds like he went to elocution. You know what elocution is? No, it's not when you get too much electricity. Elocution is where they teach you to articulate. This is a win. This will go down as a win for the ages. It sounds like he's been listening to Obama for years, the way he speaks. The guy doesn't even live in his district. Why didn't they go after him in the court? Here you go.
You can stop the super liberal Democrats and Nancy Pelosi's group, and in particular, John Ossoff. If you don't vote tomorrow, Ossoff will raise your taxes, destroy your health care, and flood our country with illegal immigrants. I need you to get out to the polls tomorrow, April 18th, and vote Republican.
All right, that was a robocall from the president to voters in Georgia's 6th district, where a special election is taking place today to fill HHS Secretary Tom Price's seat. The race is seen as a referendum on Mr. Trump in a district that has gone to Republicans for the past 38 years. Polls showed the Democrat, John Ossoff, leading the field of 18 candidates. And the Democratic candidate, John Ossoff, joins us now. Good morning, Mr. Ossoff.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. What is it like to hear President Trump using your name in this robocall to voters in your district there?
Well, I appreciate the president's interest in the race, although he's misinformed with respect to my priorities. I'm focused on going to Washington to work across the aisle to get things done for this community. To cut wasteful spending, prioritize research and development in higher education and infrastructure renewal so we can grow Metro Atlanta's economy.
But do you see your race as a referendum on Mr. Trump's popularity?
This race is about local economic issues here and values that unite people in the community in Georgia before it's about the national political circus. Everyone's looking for national implications, but all politics is local.
Well, yes, but I mean, I think you have to admit it, yours has garnered a lot of attention because it is seen as somehow connected to Mr. Trump. And in fact, is what Mr. Trump is doing in Washington part of your motivation for running?
Well, there are folks here in the community who have serious concerns about the direction of things in Washington, myself among them. But fundamentally, I'm focused on running a positive campaign about getting things done to grow Metro Atlanta's economy, to bring more high-tech jobs and investment to this community. And I think we're building a broad coalition that includes Republicans and independents by focusing on an economic vision for Atlanta that brings folks together rather than more partisanship in Washington.
So when you are out on the stump, you do or do not talk about Donald Trump?
Well, I always voice my concerns about what's happening in Washington. That includes my concerns about the administration, whether it's on the environment or civil liberties. I'll always make my views clear. I'll work with anyone in Washington who wants to get things done that are in this community's interest. I'll stand up to anyone who doesn't have this community's best interest at heart. And I'm willing to work across the aisle if it's on infrastructure, if it's on tax reform, or if it's on immigration reform. I'm focused on getting things done rather than getting drawn into the gridlock and partisanship that folks are so tired of.
This guy is such a liar. And, you know, I'll guarantee you, if you got him alone and got a few drinks into him, he would admit to being smarter than anybody in Atlanta. But
President Trump seems very focused on you. In fact, in just the past hour, he has two new tweets about you. Let me read them to you. He says, Democrat John Ossoff would be a disaster in Congress, very weak on crime and illegal immigration, bad for jobs, and wants higher taxes, say no. He also says Republicans must get out today and vote in Georgia 6, force a runoff, an easy win. Democrat Ossoff will raise your taxes, very bad on crime and Second Amendment. Your response?
Well, once again, I appreciate the president's interest. It sounds like he's misinformed about my priorities. If he wants to learn a little.
This guy's a far lefty. But here's something for you. Welcome to Anna's.
Hello,
welcome to Anna's British Elocution Lessons. Here you go, John.
Welcome to Anna's British English Elocution Online. My name is Anna, and I am going to be your teacher. This channel is all about clear and confident communication skills with a focus on the standard British English accent. So who's going to benefit? Well, if you are an English language learner.
Well, I take it that John Ossoff has spent a little time on Anna's British Elocution site. Anyway, what a clown. So they ask him. Let me play a little more of this, as infuriating as it is to listen to this guy. Another person who thinks that he can come up and very confidently lie to people, just like Obama did. And nobody will know any better. Nobody knows more than what this guy tells you at any moment, right? I mean, all of these people think that they're smarter than the average bear, and they're going to come in and they're going to make a mockery out of conservatisms and conservatives, you know?
A little bit more about my priorities. You can visit the website online at electjohn.com, electjohn.com, and learn where I really stand on the issues.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be running to your website to focus on your issues. But, I mean, do you think it's possible that the president is actually only increasing your name recognition there?
I don't know. Look, it's election day here. We're not focused on what's going on in Washington. We're focused on getting out the vote. And what I'd say to folks in Georgia is whether or not you're voting for me, it's an important day to exercise your rights as a citizen, to get out and make your voice heard. I'm offering some fresh leadership, a substantive positive vision focused on our local community, rather than more of the same partisan negativity and nonsense. And I'd be honored to have the support of folks here in Georgia. I appreciate you having me today.
You have 18 rivals. There are 18 other people, I believe, running for that same seat. What makes you think you have a chance to win?
Well, the polling and the early vote numbers show that we're within striking distance. We are certainly going for an outright win here today, but a special election is special. It's notoriously difficult to predict. It's all going to come out to turnout. We'll be ready for any outcome, but because it's all about turnout, the most important thing people can do is get to the polls. The polls are open. They can go online and find out where their polling place is. And I would just urge folks to make their voices heard and consider sending some fresh leadership to Washington.
Mr. Ossoff, is it true that you cannot vote for yourself?
Well, I grew up in this district. I grew up in this community. No one knew there was going to be an election coming. I've been living with Alicia, my girlfriend of 12 years, down by Emory University, where she's a full-time medical student. And as soon as she concludes her medical training, I'll be 10 minutes back up the street into the district where I grew up. But I want to support her and her career and do right by her.
I think that they should have gone after this guy and gone after him for voter fraud, vote fraud, election fraud. Anyway, that's the guy that didn't quite get to 50%. He might still win, but he wasn't. He was supposed to come in, and you know the way that he presents himself, and I'm a new Democrat. I'm focused on local issues. This is the biggest bunch of hogwash. And we'll get into this when we come back. 621 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, a little more Al Green, Take Me to the River. A song about coming of age and baptism.
I'd like to dedicate this song. Little Junior Park, a cousin of mine that's gone on, but he'd like to kind of carry on in his name. I sing.
I don't know why I love you like I do. Out of all the changes that you put me through, used all my money and my cigarettes, and I haven't seen how to have you yet. I don't know. Won't you tell me I love to stay, baby, yeah.
All right, so this guy, let me just get you a little bit more on this problem that the Democrats have. And, you know, I think what the Democrats thought is that local elections don't matter because they kept winning higher elections, and they don't matter because local leadership doesn't matter because the right way to run things is from the top down. That's the idea behind globalism. Some ultra sophisticated and enlightened group of people is going to run everything on earth. So it's an anti-democrat model. And I can just see somebody reaching for the phone right now since I use the term Democrat. It's, you know, the idea, the great idea for John Locke was representative government. You can't have that without democracy. You can't have that one person, one vote, people expressing their opinions. And these people that are super into leadership at the highest level, they're not into local leadership because they don't think it matters, because they believe that people like you and I who live in a local community are biased because of where we live and where we don't love humanity. Anyway, here's a little bit more about the devastation of the Democratic Party, who thinks that they have only they have the right to run everything. That's why Donald Trump has no mandate. He has no authority, because they say he has no authority because he doesn't meet their rules. They don't care about democracy. They don't care about republicanism. They don't care about our way of doing things. They want power, and they'll take it any way they can get it, including rigging every single newscast that they're ever involved with to make Trump look as horrible as possible.
The most important midterm elections,
probably since 06.
Since maybe 06, I would say since 1974, who knows? But they are absolutely critical to the future of this Democratic Party.
Well, it's funny. So yesterday I was talking to a young Democrat who's trying to pick my brain about who should he work for. Like, he's looking at the Iowa caucuses in 2020. Like, what? And I said, honestly, I have no idea. There is no leadership right now. There is such a vacuum. The sclerosis in the Democratic Party is so overwhelming and crippling that they do not have a bench. They do not have leaders.
Sclerosis or sclerotic means hardening, but it represents aging and a lack of vitality. And that guy that was just talking, his name is Jeremy Peters, and he's from the New York Times. It's absolutely devastating that, you know, the Democratic Party is like one of these towns that they build for these Westerns. And it just, you know, it looks like a vibrant town, but if you went behind it, you would see it was just a facade. The Democratic Party is lost because their ideas are so badly disproved. And they don't have any ideas or they don't have any changes to take their place. As a matter of fact, the more they lose, the farther left they go. And all of these big Democrats for the past 20, 50, 100 years have believed this garbage, this need for socialism and communalism and the importance of the party over the individual. The West was built on the idea that the individual builds the group. And the individual never becomes unimportant. 6:31, Kelly O'Connell. We got some local news. 5-2-3-14-50 coming right back. I got a guest at the 7 o'clock hour. 5-2-3-14-50 to call in and 805-6-1-80. All right, so there is another Muslim murder in Fresno. A guy screaming Allah Akbar has gone and shot three or killed three people. And I've got a little bit on that for you right here in just a second, but hold on a second here, but looking what else I have. The question is, are we on the brink of a third or second, third world war with North Korea? Kind of hard to say. I think if anything happens, it's got to happen through China, obviously. But here we go on this shooting, this another Muslim attack, I guess.
alert for you. Yesterday, a 39-year-old man out in California, Corey Ali Mohammed, shot and killed three people in Fresno. He reportedly yelled "Allahu Akbar" before shooting three white men. That's his picture right there. Let's bring in Rod Wheeler, former homicide detective and Fox News contributor. Rod, when we heard that he had shouted "Allahu Akbar," we figured it was terrorism, but apparently some of the cops out there are saying maybe it's not.
Well, good morning to you guys. You know, I think it's too quick to say that it was not terrorist related or terrorism related. At the very minimum, I can tell you it was terrorist inspired. Now, why do I say that? Real quickly, you know, I looked at this guy's Facebook post before they took it down. And check this out real quickly. This is one of the posts that he had actually written. He said, "We will continue to bring destruction and wrath upon America until we establish a kingdom." Mm-hmm. Those are the words right out of ISIS playbook. In addition to that, guys, guess what else I learned from this guy's Facebook post? That he considered the Dallas shooter back in July of last year when the five officers were killed.
Right.
He referred to that guy as a hero. So this guy, Corey Mohammed is his name, the guy yesterday, he clearly was inspired by ISIS or one of these other Islamic extremist groups.
Right. So then why would the AP present a story of all the facts in this case and say that he was shouting "God is great"? He was actually shouting "Allah Akbar," which is "God is great" in Arabic. But why wouldn't they put the exact quote?
Because they need to be politically correct. That's the only reason. And, you know, I've been saying for the longest, the only time we can really defeat ISIS or these Islamic extremists is when we call it out and when we call it what it is. That's exactly what President Trump has said, and that's what he's doing. He's calling it what it is. And that's why when I saw that report from the AP yesterday, I said, you know, they still don't get it. And here at Fox, we've just been reporting exactly what the guy said. This is what the guy said. Not only did he kill those three people yesterday, guys, but he also killed another white guy last Thursday there in Fresno. So,
Motel
you know, we
six.
Need to call it what it is, you know?
Right. And, Rod, what do you think, coming on top of the Facebook killer? I know a completely different case, but you were just talking about this killer's Facebook post. We're seeing this kind of garbage on social media, and then it leads to murders.
Right. And that's why social media, whether it's Facebook, whether it's Instagram, they need to take accountability and responsibility for keeping this kind of crap off of Facebook and off social media. Look, they have the ability to do it. Facebook has tons of money. They know how to put the algorithms in the system. They just haven't done it yet. Hopefully, by us pushing, we'll continue to get them to do the right thing, guys.
The other scary thing, Ron, is just the fact the randomness of it. Apparently, you know, he shot these three people dead randomly, selected them at random, just like the guy on Easter Sunday in Cleveland.
Well, it was sort of random, Steve, and that's an interesting observation. It wasn't necessarily random, though, because if it would have been random, then he would have shot anybody. He specifically targeted white males.
You're right.
So, for one, we know this is a hate crime. It wasn't random. He went after any white male. That's number one. And the guy in Cleveland, now that was random. He just selected anybody. But I even think in that case, he specifically selected the older guy, the old guy that could not fight him back. I think that's what the deal was.
So this guy in Fresno is black. And I would gather that he would have had a different name when he was born. So I think he looks like a convert into Islam, an American, African American. But all right, let's take a little break. I did want to get into a little bit before my guest gets here. I wanted to get into the history of the cuck. But anyway, here we'll take a little break and come right back. Well, my computer's just rebooting itself, of course. 640 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, and 805-6180 to text. Give a call, get your opinion on the record. All right, so I proposed to you that the President Obama really cared about the country, okay? All the stuff that he did was devoted to Americans, America, some higher good, right? If so, why would he allow illegal criminal felons to come into the country and stay, knowing that felons commit further felonies. Here's Trump's response. And this is from, I guess he had a Fox interview. Got to burn off a little ad here first. But so many things that Obama did, if you isolated them, make no sense.
I mean, I think we're doing really well. China has been helping and other people have been helping. But I don't know that that's going to work. It may have to be a different solution.
All right. So Secretary Kelly, DHS, he has a message to illegal immigrants. He says a single DUI can get you kicked out of the country. Do you agree with that, Stan?
Well, I'm letting him run it. He's great. He's a great general. He was a tremendously successful general. And I'm letting him run it. But I will tell you, we've gotten tremendous criminals out of this country. And I'm talking about illegal immigrants that were here that caused tremendous crime, that have murdered people, raped people. Horrible things have happened. They're getting the hell out or they're going to prison. And so many towns and cities are thanking me because we have gotten rid of a burden that you would not believe. I mean, it is a serious problem, and we never did anything about it, and now we're doing something about it.
How effective was Obama? What did Obama stand for? If you took in isolation, and I encourage you to wipe away the propaganda, the constant fawning from the news media, and look at his decisions in isolation, and you tell me what they stand for. Now, in the meantime, if you're a person who inherently and instinctively defends Obama, like little Frankie, you might be a cuck. Check it out.
This is getting kind of funny now. The Daily Beast has a story. Let me just read the headline here. Steve Bannon calls Jared Kushner a cuck and a globalist behind his back. Donald Trump's two closest aides are fighting nonstop and often face-to-face, officials say, and it's even uglier in private. The story here written by Aswin Subsing of the Daily Beast. Donald Trump's chief strategist, Stephen Bannon, has called the president's senior advisor and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, a cuck and a globalist during a time of high tension between the two top aides. If you run to the dictionary looking up the word cuck, you may have to go to some newfangled New Age dictionary to find the definition, because it isn't there. They don't know what this word means in the Ivy League. The way it is being used in Washington is to describe a poltroon conservative, a phony conservative, a rhino Republican. Now, I don't know. So far, Bannon has denied every news story about him. He denied that he thought of quitting. He denied that it was the Mercers that convinced him to stay. He's saying that all this news about him being taken off the National Security Council, that was totally misrepresented, nothing to see there. So I don't know what's going to happen with this. But if this is true, how can Trump let this slide? I mean, Kushner, not only is his son-in-law, Kushner is a chief. Kushner is, some even describe him as a shadow secretary of state. He's over in the Middle East right now. The fighting between Kushner, according to Daily Beast, and Bannon has been nonstop in recent weeks. According to sources who spoke on condition of anonymity, it's been an open secret that Bannon and Kushner often clash face to face. One official said that Bannon has lately complained about Kushner trying to shiv him and push him out the door and liken him to a fifth column in the White House. One administration official, unnamed, told the Daily Beast, quote, Bannon recently vented to us about Jared being a globalist and a cuck. He actually said cuck, as in cuckservative. And it means phony, pretend, not reliable, not really a conservative. It's an inside the beltway term. It's a kind of a portmanteau of conservative and cuckold. Cuckold and conservative, and it's become a favorite slur on the right. It's like a sexually, racially charged version of rhino, which is Republican in name only. So If you went to the dictionary and you entered cuck and it said cuckold, then you were halfway there. But and it's C-U-C-K. Don't spell it a different way.
All right. So I'm starting to hear a racial element to this. I have never heard any racial aspect to it. It doesn't really, in the times that I've heard it used, I've never heard any part of that was racial. But anyway, take a last break here and we'll be back. Got a guest at 7523-1450. I'm going to come back and have a little bit of how National Pubic Radio talks about it. 650, Kelly O'Connell, AM Los Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450, and 805-61-802 text. And I'm back here, and we have back again from Thai India, and with a new menu here. But we're going to be talking. We'll talk in the after the 7 o'clock hour starts. But we have a new menu at Thai India. But here is, as I promised, NPR, how would NPR talk about the cuck? Check this out.
Now's a good time to listen to another podcast, maybe something from the archives. This has been an election season of words. Bigly, or is it big league?
Cut taxes, big league, and you're going to raise taxes, big league.
Deplorable.
Supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
And can't forget nasty.
Is to replenish the Social Security Trust Fund.
The post-election, one word has recently caught a lot of people's attention. Cuck. C-U-C-K. It's a word being used by the so-called alt-right, white nationalists and white supremacists, like Richard Spencer, speaking at the National Policy Institute conference that took place in Washington, D.C. last month.
The mainstream media, or perhaps we should refer to them in the original German, Lügenpresse. It's not just that they are leftists and cucks. It's not just that many are genuinely stupid. Indeed, one wonders if these people are people at all. Or instead, soulless golem, animated by some dark power to repeat whatever talking point John Oliver stated the night before.
Lots of language to talk about here.
Lügenpresse,
or the lying press, was a term used in Nazi Germany. And golem?
Soulless golem.
That mystical monster created from clay to save Jews from the wrath of the pogroms in Eastern Europe. But today on the podcast, we are going to focus on the word cuck. We'll hear from linguist Michael Adams, sex columnist Dan Savage, and white nationalist Richard Spencer. Words matter, or do words matter to you?
Of course words matter. Words have power.
Cuck, what does it mean? And how did it become the slur of choice for white nationalists? I'm Nina Perzuki, and you're listening to The World in Words.
We said cuck. Do you know what that means?
It's
a new insult on the internet.
A cuck?
Yes.
C-U-K?
C-U-C-K.
This is podcaster and provocateur Joe Rogan, introducing his guest to the word cuck. It's a shortening of the ancient insult cuckold. You know that word for a man being cheated on by his wife. Now, many modern insults already exist to emasculate men. There's wussy and pussy. But white nationalists have taken hold of this new old word and twisted the meaning to slander men, quote unquote, cheating on the white race.
A cuck is someone who's a wimpy male. And it started out with cuckservative. It started out pretty interesting. It was, let's make fun of the GOP for being open borders.
Gavin McInnes there explaining the meaning of the portmanteau, Cuckservative on Glenn Beck's show, The Blaze. Cuck and Cuckservative first gained traction in the underbelly of the internet, showing up on sites like 4chan and then popping up in more mainstream spaces like Twitter and YouTube before catching fire first in the conservative press.
And it was a nice attack on George W. Bush, on Rubio, on Jeb Bush, the Bushes in general.
Right.
And I thought, I love this now. But then next thing you know, you're a cuckservative if you're a race mixer, like Nick Searcy was getting in trouble for adopting a black kid. Or you're a cuckservative if you're Ezra Levant and you're Jewish and you don't hate Israel. That's when I had to go, whoa, whoa, guys. It's sort of like the black stuff that gets on Spider-Man and then he turns into Venom.
Yeah.
You've got to be careful with it.
Suddenly this.
All right. So anyway, that's National Public Radio. And here is a little bit from Rebel Media, Gavin McGinnis, talking about commercials that are cuck commercials.
When did commercials become cuck commercials? I don't know who's writing these things, but they seem to be this sort of mamby-pamby, flaky things that either just subjugate men or have absolutely no purpose. There's a commercial out now called Love Has No Labels where they blow our minds. Check this out. Did you know that there's other kind of relationships besides a cis man and a cis woman?
So they've got this commercial where they show these two people kissing behind this screen. It's an x-ray screen, and then they come out and it's two women who are kissing and everybody cheers and claps. And you might have seen the Love Has No Labels ads on YouTube. But anyway, the idea behind the cuck is a person who has been shamed through the media, through social forces or miseducation into giving up the idea that America is a great and noble place where we fight for the best and we help out other countries and we take outrageous risks and reap outrageous rewards, including in business. And we're going to be talking about this in just a minute. And my buddy from Thai India is here and he's going to be sponsoring the show, Arif Khan. And we'll be back to talk about that. We're going to talk about business in this valley and also how to take on the demons of failure that are all around us, many in the form of cuckism. 6:59, Kelly O'Connell, and we'll be back at 7 o'clock. 7:06, actually. We do have a guest here, but first, how about some headlines for you? Former Patriots tight end superstar Aaron Hernandez found dead in prison. He was in a gang, and he kept up the gang life, and but I guess he didn't like prison too much. Funny enough, he just won a murder trial. I don't know if he was trying to make a point, but not around anymore to kick him. Now, Glenn Beck had a promising young reporter, Tommy Lahren, who stood up for abortion, and then she got taken off the air. I think it's another mistake by Glenn Beck. Why not just say I totally disagree with her, but she's a refreshing voice, and maybe we'll convert her. But Glenn Beck, one disaster after another. The Beck watch continues as his market size shrinks. Nobody knows what he stands for. A Trump administration is reviewing Iran nuclear deal as we appear to be on the verge of a potential conflict, military conflict with North Korea. No one knows how that is going to end. And the Trump administration has deported a dreamer for the first time, and he's bragging about sending back all of the criminals. And in the meantime, there's a battle over the sanctuary cities, of course. And looking for any other news that you need to hear from Trump, or pardon me, from Drudge, who wouldn't exist if not for Trump wouldn't exist if not for Drudge. The Georgia candidate fails to get 50%, so the dream of picking off Obama or Trump, I'm getting all confused here, is the dream is going to have to be put on hold. And Bill O'Reilly, another claim that he has sexually harassed a woman, his run may be over. It is possible. Americans turning to microdoses of psychedelics. Can you imagine that? Don't take any microdoses, friends. And all right, so we've got RF Khan here, and we had a conversation. I ran into him at his restaurant. He was very, very kind enough to come up to the table and engage in some conversation, and I thought, wow, this would be a great guest. He came on the show, and I got a lot of positive feedback on it. People liked, number one, hearing about business in Las Cruces, and number two, just some of the things that Arif said in terms of challenging ideas that we seem to hold onto pretty tightly. I had dinner with him yesterday, and we were talking about business. And one of the things that stood out to me about Arif from the times that we've talked is confidence, belief in the community, belief in Mesilla Valley, and not being, as the mayor is famously connected to saying that this is a no-growth area. What a disaster. In other words, anybody who doesn't have a job here already doesn't deserve one. That's the stance of the mayor. Instead, a refreshing approach from RF, who is even willing to help other businesses. He's even willing to give his recipes out to people, knowing that they can't possibly cook it at home. But the point being that he's unafraid to engage in business and try to help build up the community. And, good morning, Arif. And I'm looking at your beautiful new Thai India recipe, or menu, and really gorgeous. I was really impressed. And under the curry section, red curry, green curry, Penang curry, Indian chicken curry. What did I eat last night?
I think you had the curry chicken.
Very tasty. Very, very tasty. We had a conversation on the history of cuisine in India, talked about a lot of stuff. So I want to talk a little bit about trail, the history of Indian cuisine and how the spices revolutionized the world. But I want to get back to the main topic, which is business in Las Cruces.
Well, good morning, Kelly. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Arif. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Okay, so we had talked a little bit yesterday about the spice trail and Indian cuisine and some of the innovations and stuff. In your mind, when you hear spice trail, when you hear about the history of India, what comes to mind?
Well, what comes to mind? India has been referred to as the golden bird, or the, you know, and not because of the gold, it's mostly because of the spices. And India is very famous for using spices in a way that the rest of the world does not use. We are very, very, go back to being confident again. Spices is not something that we shy away from. So spice has been a very, very important export. Very, very important in every part of the culture. Indian culture is used not only in cooking, but it is used as, in religious celebrations. It is used in every aspect of Indian life. Spice is actually, literally, is life that India is very, very confident in using. And it has become a society that has imported its cuisine around the world. And all it has done is enhanced the experience everywhere. I have never been to a country that I have not encountered Indian cuisine or have had an opportunity to experience Indian cuisine in almost all parts of the world. So it's very, very important.
Well, I mean, there's an argument. If there wasn't for the spice trail, that these trading trails that occurred in the Middle East, the Old World, opened up really trading in general. I mean, I think that these spices, when they were shared in these countries, became such a huge deal because, I mean, in the ancient days, people didn't have a lot of options when it came to cooking.
Well, that's true. The spices are very, very important. I mean, it enhances your experience, not only from the taste point of view, but also spices are very, very healthy. We need those spices. For instance, you know, turmeric is amazingly helpful when you can, you know, digest it, when you use it in different aspects. It's not only just used for cooking, but all these different spices are there to be utilized in various aspects of our lives. I have not been to a medical doctor for the last 12 years, with the exception of normal, you know, so often, but for any ailment. And the reason is that I use spices to counteract some of the things that we deal with on a daily basis. My children are deathly afraid of using chemical medication. They would not, unless they're completely incapacitated. They refuse to use because we use natural herbs and different spices to heal, to take advantage of that. It is one of the things that we were discussing the other day about pepper. Capsaicin is a spice. Capsaicin is a chemical that is found in peppers, and it is very, very healthful, and it is not harmful to your body. It doesn't hurt. It just enhances your experiences. It eliminates pain. It is good for your heart, and it's just the benefits go on and on and on, and there's really no side effects.
Yeah, but in world history, and I'm looking at a map of this right now, part of the silk, what they would call the silk route, which involves silk and horses and spices and goods that were made in one part of the world and brought to others, you see a trail, China, Java, India, Persia, Arabia, Africa, Egypt, Europe, and that was along the lines of this trail, and it was very, very important in history for the development of
society.
Yeah. And we'll take a little break and come back and discuss this some more. We've got Arif Khan, and I've got another version of Take Me to the River that's a lot more famous. The great hit by Al Green, by the Talking Heads, 523-1450 and 805-61802. Text. We'll be right back with the owner of Thai India. Okay, a little introduction here on the spice trade, and we're talking about spices and the use of spice in say Thai or Indian cuisine in particular in this case. And by the way, Thai India is on 1445 West Picacho Avenue, the corner basically a little bit down from the corner of Valley and Picacho. But here's a little bit. Those innocent spice jars sitting in your cupboard don't do much to reveal their incredible history, but did you know that nutmeg was once worth more by weight than gold? That in the 16th century, London dock workers were paid their bonuses in cloves? That in 410 AD, when the Visigoths captured Rome, they demanded 3,000 pounds of peppercorns as ransom? In its day, the spice trade was the world's biggest industry. It established and destroyed empires, led to the discovery of new continents, and in many ways helped to lay the foundation for the modern world. And spices today, which are widely available and inexpensive, were once tightly guarded, generating immense wealth for those who controlled them. The spice trade began in the Middle East over 4,000 years ago. Arabic spice merchants would create a sense of mystery by withholding the origins of their wares and would ensure high prices by telling fantastic tales about fighting off fierce winged creatures to reach spices growing high on cliff walls. And here is another little bit from this topic. What are spice routes? And this is from the United Nations own site. The spice routes, also known as maritime silk roads, is the name given to the network of sea routes that link the east with the west. They stretch from the west coast of Japan through the islands of Indonesia, around India to the lands of the Middle East, and from there across the Mediterranean to Europe. It is a distance of over 15,000 kilometers, whatever that means in miles. And even today is not an easy journey. From our very earliest history, people have traveled the spice routes, at first probably venturing only short distances from home ports. But over the centuries, their ships sailed further and further across the seas and oceans. And to bring this trade, to bring this incredible product. Now, here's a little bit from Wikipedia. The spice trade refers to the trade between historical civilizations, Asia, North, East Africa, and Europe. Spices such as cinnamon, cassia, cardamom, ginger, pepper, and turmeric were known and used in antiquity for commerce in the Eastern world. These spices found their way into the Middle East before the beginnings of the Christian era, where the true sources of these spices were withheld by the traders and associated with fantastic tales. So this is a huge deal in world history. It's still a big deal today. And it is synonymous. The development of ancient society into the modern age is synonymous with the Silk Road and the spice trails. So having said that, with the Arif Khan here, Arif, you were telling me about the saffron. Mm-hmm. Almost put sassafras in there. So tell us a little bit about saffron.
Saffron is used as a spice, and it's used in various different. It comes from Spain mostly, and it is very meticulous, very hard. It's even harder to pick because you're only using the stems of a flower,
right?
And each flower has probably three or four stems.
Yeah.
So then that is picked and then used as a fragrant spice. It is used as coloring spice. It is used very, very effectively, and it brings out a very distinct flavor, and it's quite expensive. I just purchased 1 gram of saffron for $45, and it is very expensive because it is very, very limited in quantity.
And it's irreplaceable in terms of flavor, right?
It is not. You cannot copy it. Cannot use it any other way.
I think that there is something, though, that's kind of synonymous here, and I'll just kind of bring it into local business. In the same way that saffron is very expensive and irreplaceable, leadership mm-hmm. in business is the knowledge of it seems to be not out there much, and without confidence in a plan forward, you cannot possibly be successful, especially in Mesilla Valley.
Well, that is true. Leadership has become synonymous with simply titles. We assume that because you have a title, you're a manager or you're a president or you are a vice president or whatever it is that you have, that somehow makes you a leader. Leader is not a noun. Leader is a verb. Leadership requires you to be in action. Leadership requires you to pay attention to your organization. You are responsible for its success. John Maxwell is famously heard saying, "Leadership, an organization rises or falls by the leadership." an organization is as good the leaders leading it, whether it be a society, whether it be a community, whether it be a city, whether it be a business. It is all depends on leadership. And if you have no vision, if you have no idea where you're going, not only that, but also if you have no ability to make everybody part of that vision along willingly, not by force, not by simply saying, hey, I'm the boss, you have to do these things. Well, that's to a certain extent, you can get away with that, but it is not leadership.
Leadership by inspiration as opposed to leadership by fear.
Right. You know, there is a certain aspect of leadership. We all start at a certain level. We all start into the leadership at a level, you know, where I call a level one leadership, which is basically you have a title.
Yeah.
Now you are responsible for using that title appropriately. If you use it properly and you build yourself first and develop confidence in your vision and your ideas, then you must also take into account everybody else that will come along. People don't like to follow just because they have to follow. They like to follow because they want to follow.
Isn't there a lot of that out there these days, though? I'm picking it up as the millennial, whether it's fairly applied to them or not, the millennial idea that their people are entitled, they're owed stuff, and they don't need to follow a business plan or follow leadership unless it is transparently in their immediate best interests.
Well, I don't want to harp. I don't want to say that the millennials are the problem. The problem is that we've created the millennials by not giving them the proper education, proper ideals. They grew up in a society that simply assumed or simply wanted to spare their feelings, if you will. And we incorrectly decided that failure was something bad, that failure was to be avoided at all cost, rather than what failure is designed for. Failure is designed for us to be able to learn. We don't learn unless we fail, unless we struggle. There is a famous saying, this little boy walking down in the forest and he sees this caterpillar trying to emerge from the cocoon.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees the plight of the caterpillar and decides that it's really not struggle. So he takes his little knife and slices the cocoon out so that the caterpillar can easily get out of the cocoon. Well, the result of that idea is that caterpillar falls to the ground and dies because it has not developed the wings to fly.
Uh-huh.
The cocoon is designed for the caterpillar to struggle so that the wings can be developed so that the caterpillar can turn into a butterfly. But if you take that struggle away from the caterpillar, it is no longer able to sustain it. And that's the same thing that we've done with the millennials. We have basically given them then this idea that they are perfect, that they are no failure, that they're absolutely 100% correct all the time. And when they go into the real world, they find that that is not the case, that they don't just get rewarded for showing up. They just don't get rewarded. And that is a frustrating point or the frustrating feeling for them as well.
I gotcha. I couldn't agree more. Let's take a little break here for local news. And I've got Arif Khan. We're talking about leadership and having a local business and being a success and having confidence in that undertaking. What's your contact information if anybody wants to talk business with you?
They can call me directly on my cell, which is 419-665-1456.
One more time.
419-665-1456. Or they can certainly reach us at the restaurant.
Thai India. And you're also available for mentoring in businesses.
Yes. In fact, from the last conversation we had here, two of the businesses that came about because of that, you know, one of them is a nonprofit organization that I'm helping them to seed, hopefully, and the other one is a for-profit business that have come and talked.
Well, that's good. That's good. 7:30 local news, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450, 805-610-80 to text. And we're talking to Arif Khan, who has got a fantastic attitude. It reminds me of my dad. The only direction to go is up. My dad was always very positive, and I admired that. And people ever ask me how I'm doing, I always say I've never been better. It is kind of honoring my dad. That was his attitude. Never tried to get pity from people, never complained. And it was, you just love to spend time with him. 7:31, Arif Khan, you're going to love spending time with him when we come back after local news. AM Las Cruces 523-1450. Well, we're here with Arif Khan. He is he's the owner of Thai India, but he's also a business consultant. He and his family have had a lot of success back east with businesses, and he came here to try his hand at business here, and certainly an uphill climb, but he says that it's a great place to do business. Now here we're talking about the Silk Road, the Spice Trail, and one of the things that was put out there, and there's roads, the Persian Royal Road ran from Susa in northern Persia, modern-day Iran, to the Mediterranean Sea in Asia Minor or Turkey, and featured postal stations along the route with fresh horses for envoys to quickly deliver messages through the empire. And even Herodotus, famous historian, wrote about this, saying there's nothing in the world that travels faster than these Persian couriers. Neither snow nor rain nor heat nor darkness of night prevents these couriers from completing their designated stages with utmost speed. I immediately realized that the United States Postal Service stole their motto from Herodotus of all places. I was talking about cucks earlier, men afraid of their own shadow. They're afraid to stand up for what they believe, maybe afraid to be bold and confident and put a business plan together. How does a local business owner who really wants to make his stamp on this, stamp his presence in this community, how do you avoid being a cuck, having the spirit of fear?
The only way that I know how to avoid being afraid is to face your fear. You can't run away from your fears. I teach my children the same thing. I teach them even in dream states. I say, when you face a monster in your dream, all you have to do is turn around and face the monster and it will disappear. It is the same in real life. If you're afraid of anything, that is what you need to face. That is what you need to stand up to. Fear is, there's only two ways to deal with fear. Either you run away from it or you face it. To face it, I choose to stand up, and whatever is going to happen, it is going to happen. Running away from your fears, running away from failure is not the way to go. I've had tremendous failures in my life.
But you're saying last night the most important thing for success is failure.
It is.
How does that work?
Well, it does work, because the only way to learn is by failing.
Is by trying, right?
By trying and failing. Actually, literally failing. I mean, you talk about any successful, you look at any of the people who have succeeded in life, and if you really dig deep inside their life, you will find that they have massively failed.
Uh-huh.
Before they became so cool.
Well, speaking of restaurants, Colonel Sanders himself didn't open Kentucky Fried Chicken, I think, until he was 65.
Exactly. And he failed miserably. Nobody would help him. He would go door to door. He would bake this batch of the chicken, and he would go door to door, giving it away, literally giving it away, just so that people can at least try it.
Yeah.
And then now look at Kentucky Fried Chicken.
The largest restaurant chain in the world.
I mean, it's like I was in China one time with my friend asked me, do you want to go to Kentucky Fried Chicken in Beijing, China? I said, no, I don't want to go to, but they are there. They are everywhere.
They're everywhere. And they, I think, I'm trying to remember where this happened, if it was Japan or China, where they had dressed up, they had taken the beloved silhouette of our colonel and had put a Hitler mustache on him and used him as an icon in front of their business, which would obviously be a suicide mission here, but nobody really knew what was going on over there, but they still got in trouble. But, all right, so when you give people advice, people come to you and they say, you know, Arif, I need some help. My business it's not thriving. It's stuck. We're not going out of business, but we're not reaching our goals. We're not growing. What are the top couple, one, two, three things that they tell you about that they're struggling with?
Well, one of the biggest struggle for any business is our government. It's insistence on trying to homogenize everybody, that everybody has to be equal, everybody has to be this, and the rules and the regulations and everything else are so mind-boggling and so absolutely horrendous for a business. That's one of the first things that I noticed that they're struggling with, because majority of the time, most business owners really don't understand all the rules and the regulations that they have to follow, and they get in trouble for not understanding those things, because not that they are bad people, not that they're just too don't have time to really understand the whole myriad of stupid rules sometimes that the government imposes.
Yeah.
The other thing that I look at, the second thing I want to look at is how are they dealing with their finances? What exactly are they doing? Because most businesses run by sheer desire to do this, that they don't understand how to leverage some of the things that there's out there for them to be able to take advantage of that. So we look at that, and then we look at their organization. How is the organization functioning? Are they have some leadership? Are they growing? Are they doing something? Are they creating an environment for people to want to come work there? You know, if you create in a hostile environment, you're going to be struggling. A lot of times, you know, when I first started this restaurant, I was inundated by the advice from the people saying Las Cruces is not conducive to business. There are not enough talent here. There's not enough people who want to work here. There's nothing. And my question was, why? Cruces is somehow exclusive from the world? Are there not people here? Are there people so different in Las Cruces that we can't find talent? I mean, it is an amazing city. It is a beautiful city in every aspect of it. It's beautiful weather-wise. It's beautiful, you know.
Scenery.
Scenery is beautiful.
History.
History,
yeah, the
people.
All right, so what's holding us back?
Our inability to recognize that. We don't want to talk about this. We don't want to discuss it. You know, every time I have a conversation with some of the business owners, some of the business people, they say the same thing. They say, well, there's not enough talent here. And I'm saying, okay, well, if there's not enough talent, let's cultivate that talent. Let's create it.
Yeah.
Why don't we do that?
Well, why don't we? I mean, what it just seems like there is, with all of the empty stores, buildings, commercial buildings, and I know some of them are pretty ancient, but it seems like there's a spirit of failure and resignation in this valley.
Yeah, I mean, that's the it's unfortunate, but we have to talk about that. We have to discuss this. We have to have a conversation. Remember what we were talking about yesterday.
Let's take a break and come back on this. And I do want to mention Bangkok's Hitler Fried Chicken is in trouble with Kentucky Fried Chicken. They've got a picture of, from the neck down, the colonel, from the neck up, Adolf Hitler. And it's called Hitler Fried Chicken, and they could get fried themselves. And that's in Bangkok, folks. So might be a little careful when you go there. What's going on? But so we're talking to Arif Khan, and we're going to be right back and talk about how we can change, how we can challenge. And by challenging our ideas, maybe challenge our rate of success. 1-800-522-1450. RF Khan or mayor? I'm going to say
No.
I'm going to say it first here. Yes,
no,
I will.
No.
I will.
No.
I am going to say, and I just did RF Khan for mayor. Somebody who believes in business and thinks we can grow in Mesilla Valley would be a huge step forward. With all due respect, Bob. We'll be right back. .747 flying those friendly skies. And you have Arif Khan here from Thai India. And looking at the history of cinnamon, and Arif and I were just talking about it, it comes from the bark of a tree. And there's more than one variety. And the name cinnamon comes from ancient Hebrew or Phoenician word kinnaman. And its ancient Greek equivalent, kinnamamon, it first appeared in English in the 15th century, and it's a verb, the verb associated Hebrew, kitsia, comes from to strip bark. The bark is stripped off, and that it was enormously valuable and was very, very dangerous at a very long trip that it took, and comes out of China. And imported from also Arabia and Ethiopia. And Pliny the Elder talks about it the first time. And they were on the Red Sea on rafts with rudders, sails, or oars, according to Pliny. And a pound of cassia or cinnamon would cost 300 denarii, a year's wages. So... anyway, so the spice trail has ended up here in Las Cruces at Thai India. And all right, so any chance we could do what you had mentioned previously, which was to organize a symposium or some sort of a conference for local business leaders to get together? And
I am 100% for that, and I would be absolutely thrilled to donate the time and whatever it needs to make that happen, because only through bringing people of like-minded thought process that you advance and you move forward. And it doesn't really take that much to make a big difference. A lot of time we assume I'm only just one person, what can I do?
Yeah.
Well, one person can make a difference. One more person can change the world.
Right.
And there's no reason why we cannot turn this thing around to say, a lot of time, you know, I think it was 4 weeks ago, I was in a food show in Albuquerque, and I was talking to a couple of chefs, and one of the things that they said, well, I just can't find the right people in this area. And my question was, have you looked into your practices? Are you attracting the right people? There's no reason for us not to...
What does that mean?
Well, we have to go look for the talent. We have to search for it. We can't simply sit back on our laurels and say, talent should just automatically come to me, and that we should have the right people in my organization. They're not going to just show up. You have to go out and do the search. The restaurant that we have in Indiana, we go through tremendous effort to find the right people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, before we put anybody on the floor, we have 8-week training process for them to understand exactly how we do things, and then we create an environment for them to thrive, to succeed.
Right.
Same thing we're doing with Thai India. I mean, I started paying more than minimum wages when I first started, and it was unheard of because people think, oh, you're paying too much.
Yeah.
Well, it is not too much.
Uh-huh.
You know, you attract the right people if you give them the right reason to come and work for you, and it is to your benefit to have well-paid staff, well-paid, you know, employees, because when they're happy, they're going to do the right thing.
Right.
So it's just, it's common sense, but as we talked about before, common sense is not so common.
Not at all, and especially in this town. I just think that the people are living in fear, and that it affects their business decisions, you know, and also the idea that the city is opposed to businesses and is not supportive of businesses being opened here is just gives people, I think, the heebie-jeebies.
Right. I mean, one of the things that is ironic, and it's not just, you know, Mesilla Valley and Las Cruces. I mean, that's the American mentality. One of the things that is contrast, Singapore is one of the fastest growing economies in the world.
Uh-huh. And it's a tiny island.
It's a very, very small island. But here's the distinction. When Singapore suffers an economic downturn, the first thing they do is to increase their spending on education, on teaching. They recognize and they realize that in order for us to grow, we have to educate, we have to teach.
Yeah.
What do we do first?
Well, you have to teach people before they... 2 a.m. Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180. And this talk about business is really stirring the hornet's nest in Frankie's house. He's going crazy. And first Hillary loses, and now people are talking about business in Mesilla Valley. He's besides himself. We got a call. Thanks for the call to Kelly O'Connell Show's This.
My name's Chair.
Chair, how you doing? Thanks for the call. Hope you're well. And do you have a question or a statement?
No, I have a question. I was wondering the business. How hard was it for your guest to get a business license here, and what process did he have to go through? Was it difficult?
Arif?
Well, it is not really that difficult to get a business license. I mean, first of all, I didn't have to go because I bought an existing business. So there was already a license in place. All I had to do is go convert it into my name. So I didn't really go through the whole business process of licensing a brand new business. So I can't really answer that question effectively. But when I did go to the city hall and I did convert it to my name, it wasn't that difficult. I'm sure there's processes that you have to go through. And
well,
I've heard
some people complain a lot. Can you give your number again, and maybe this gentleman can call you?
419-665-1456.
JR, I got to take a break.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call. All right, so folks, if you're interested in finding out more about how to change your attitude on business and become more successful, give RF a call. If you can't remember the number, come down to Thai Indy and just ask for him. He's always there, ready to add in a little bit. We'll take a break, and we'll be right back. 523-1450 AM Las Cruces. All right, so let's just sum this up here, and people are interested in business, and there's a lot of people who'd like to open a business here, but they look around and they see a lot of businesses fail. We see Sitel shut down, 400 jobs. There's a lot of stuff that is not offered in this town that another town of comparable size would have, and yet people are afraid to open up a novel business. I mean, nobody's afraid to open a Mexican restaurant here, but for example, and they all seem to be busy, but you know, there's just a lack of so many basic things in this community, but people are afraid that even if they offer something that's needed, it may not be successful. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I mean, it is, as have been said before, if you believe that you can succeed or if you believe that you will fail, you are absolutely correct. It is the idea that because other people have failed, I will as well. The reason most businesses fail, number one reason most businesses fail is lack of understanding, lack of education, lack of really understanding why you're in business for. What is your purpose for being in business? Not simply being just opening a store or doing anything else. You have to have a clear understanding of why you're in business. What is the purpose? I ask these two questions from all of my clients when I first start. Tell me why you're in business. And majority of them are not able to answer that question succinctly. They say, well, I'm in the business for making money. Well, everybody is in business for making money. The next question really throws them off completely, and that is, if I asked your customer, client, or guest why you're in business, what would they tell? And that just completely blows them away, because you have to understand business is there to provide a service to the community, to someone.
Right. Can we pick this up? You're going to be coming back. So yes. You're sponsoring the show. So thank you for sponsoring the show. Thanks for coming in today. Very illuminating. And what dish would you suggest people try in the spring here? What Indian, Thai?
Come try everything. Come try just
everything. Everything is tasty.
Right.
7:59, and we thank RFCon for sponsoring the show and also for coming in today to talk a little bit about business. 523-1454 tomorrow, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450 on KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, great to spend my morning with you, and we'll see you in 22 hours. Ciao.